For CJLO News, I'm Danny O'Bree. Filmmaker Avi Lewis has been elected as the new Democratic Party's new leader, defeating his opposition with 56% of the vote on the first ballot. After claiming victory, Lewis stated that the NDP is united in the commitment to working-class people and looks forward to speaking with British Columbian Premier David Eby. He also stated that in an economy that is rigged for the wealthy, he intends to expand public services, such as starting federally run grocery stores and to increase corporate tax. Alberta NDP leader Naheed Nenshi criticized the result and said that Lewis becoming the federal leader was not in the interests of Alberta. Avi Lewis is a third-generation politician with both his father and grandfather being former leaders of the New Democratic Party. The Independent Investigations Office of British Columbia is searching for witnesses to police officers shooting a man and leaving him with minor injuries in Vancouver over the weekend. The Surrey Police Service says that the man allegedly confronted police with an edged weapon after they were called to a home on 81st Avenue. After officers shot the man, paramedics treated him and brought him to the hospital. The Independent Investigations Office of BC is a civilian oversight agency that looks at cases where people are injured in their altercations with police. They say that officers used both less lethal weapons and guns in the altercation. Well-known American comedian and actor Alex Duong passed away late last week of septic shock at a hospital in Los Angeles. Born Alexander Duong in 1984 in Dallas, Texas, he kick-started his career when he wrote the story Enchanted Melody, which was showcased as a stage play by LA's top theater company for authentic Asian-American stories. He later appeared in popular TV shows such as The Young and the Restless, 90210, and Death Valley, but was best known for portraying Sonny Lee in the police drama Blue Bloods. He was also highly recognized as a comedian and performed stand-up at popular clubs such as The Comedy Store and The Laugh Factory. Alex Duong is survived by his wife Christina and his daughter Everest. He was 42 years old. For more information, go to cjlo.com/news.
You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM. It is April the 5th. I'm Maxwell. The show is REVC. Very special show this week, not only because it's the 99th episode of REVC, how exciting, 99, so too I got the chance to interview one half of They Might Be Giants, John Linnell. You know they just came out with an EP, and then they've got a new album coming out, The World Is to Dig. And that EP, it's quite short, it's something like 7 minutes, so why not? We're just gonna listen to it. Three songs. Eyeball, The Glamour of Rock, Peggy Guggenheim. Then a track off the new album they came out with last week. We listened to Outside Brain. This is the first track they came out with, Wu-Tang. Why not? And then after that, we'll get into the interview. Of course, also, it's Easter. Happy Easter. That led to me having a bunch of problems getting here. Bus was like 7 minutes late. Then there's a whole thing with getting into the building. I had to get followed up here. C'est la vie. Anyway, let's listen to They Might Be Giants, and then we'll actually get to listen to one of the Giants. How exciting on this very special 99th REVC.
Someone's got control of my mind. Nothing that I do is my responsibility now. No way to ignore the thing I just said. It wasn't true, and this is
the thing.
The furniture's identically matched. I like it when all the interior surfaces are colored the same.
Look me in the eyeball.
This is really me now.
Look me in the eyeball.
Everyone can see that.
franchises, and I've got no kick against it, just as long as they don't play it, just as long as they don't play it. Okay, go ahead and change my mind. I'll probably say that it was my idea the whole time. It was my idea, the whole thing was really my idea.
Thank you.
everyone. You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM, or you're tuned in across the World Wide Web at CJLO.com. My name is Maxwell. You just heard that a few minutes ago, because we just listened to a few songs there. That was Wu-Tang, They Might Be Giants. Before that, three songs off their new EP, Eyeball. First, of course, Eyeball. Then The Glamour of Rock. Then that instrumental track, Peggy Guggenheim. Now we're going to bring it to some ads, and when we come back, it's not actually going to be me. It's going to be me in the past. And you're going to be listening to me talking to John Linnell himself, one of the Johns of They Might Be Giants. If you don't know a thing about They Might Be Giants, they've been topping the charts since the mid-80s. They came out on a roll with three hit songs, album after album after album, and then more on more. And then they dominated the kids' charts after that. Stuff like Hot Dog, The Mesopotamians. It never stopped coming with them. And then you keep hearing back and back these hits that stay relevant. Anna Ang, Don't Let's Start, Istanbul, Birdhouse in Your Soul. You hear them all the time, even the continuous hits as it goes on, like Dr. Worm. And so, here's the ads. And then, the Honorable John Linnell.
CJLO is announcing the inaugural edition of Dead Air. From April 9th through 12th, CJLO is taking over La Sodorenia for 4 days of emerging music discovery. On Thursday, coming out to the Kingdom of Birds album launch with Ekka and Shunk. Friday is all-night pop with 17 Sport, Faima, Sarah Feldman, and Wicked Easy. Saturday, we're welcoming Brooklyn's Hiding Places for the launch of their album, The Secret to Good Living, where they'll be joined by CJLO faves Knitting and Sasha K. Closing out the festival is a stacked lineup of Kelly Elizabeth, Angela Beggin, and Museums. Individual tickets are available now, and a Dead Air festival pass is just $40, and that'll get you into all of the shows. Follow us at Dead Air MTL on Instagram and Dead Air Festival on Facebook. Hope to see you there.
Tune in to Mo Read Mo Radio for some amazing jams from the worlds of Latin American rhythmic music. Saturdays at 5 p.m. only on CJLO. Mo Read Mo with Mr. B.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM on that magical AM tuner, Montreal, or you're tuned in across the World Wide Web at CJLO.com. I'm Maxwell, and the name of the show, it's REVC, and I've got something really special today. I've got with me one half of They Might Be Giants. They just released an EP back in mid-January, Eyeball. And not only that, they've got another album coming out in just about 2 weeks. It's nonstop. I've got with me here John Linnell. John, thank you so much for coming.
My pleasure, Maxwell. Nice to speak with you.
Yeah, now this is a bit unprecedented for you guys. It's been 5 years and it's your 24th album, pretty much from the mid 80s until 2021. It was an album every 2-3 years. You know, how
That's
did
right.
that
yeah.
slowdown feel in the moment, and did it even feel like a slowdown?
I'd say it didn't, because we had a series of interruptions in amongst, we've been playing in public pretty continuously for this period of time, when between the last two albums, but there was an obstacle course when we went through COVID. John Flansburg was recovering from a car accident that he was in, and I had some health issues. So it slowed us down a little bit, but we are, we're back. We're going to be hitting the road very soon, and we'll be playing a bunch of shows this year.
Yeah, you guys have really been pulling in all of the various elements on this one. You're talking about the show. I see that this tour you guys are about to do, it's kind of hitting like a big band itch, right? Like, you guys are going to have a ton of people on stage. Have you ever done shows like that before?
We have recently, and we have kind of in the further back in the past. But historically, we've probably mainly done shows as a band with a 5-piece or even a 4-piece. And now we have a 3-piece horn section. They're guys that we have been working with for the entirety of the 21st century, and, you know, in a little, even a little bit into the last century. So, you know, this is not completely unprecedented. The last tour we did to support the previous album, we had these guys with us as well. But yeah, it's a big show. It's, you know, fun. We also kind of collapse and expand over the course of the show where the horn guys are not up there for the entire time. And then occasionally, you know, we certainly have parts of the show where it's just me and John playing, you know, almost like a folk two piece, or it'll be us and the drummer, you know, so we try and mix it up.
Well, that makes sense because you guys do have a propensity for horns and the sort of bandier elements. I mean, just on this eyeball, it kind of goes from indie rock to a sort of horn, like, you know, the sort of brassy style that you guys dabble in. And then there's the instrumental track. Now, you said that those are kind of extras from the album. Was this one sort of continuous creation process and eventually you just decided, I think I have too many songs for an album?
That's pretty much how we always work. We cook up probably about twice as many songs as we're going to need, generally. And that's ideally, I would say. We have a lot of material, and then we go through it and figure out what's going to hang together as an album. And hopefully, you know, it's the better material that makes it onto the album. But then we always have lots of leftover stuff, and it's, you know, we're trying to keep the quality high overall. But that stuff, the stuff that's left over, winds up on EPs or on compilations.
Now, it seems like you're doing some, you talked about the history of it. It seems like you're doing some looking into the past. I know that you guys did the Flood Revival Tour just about three years ago. And now you have this song on the new album, Wu-Tang, about a Wu-Tang fan. Is there some nostalgia baked into this album that I feel like I didn't hear on something like Nanobots?
Oh, I don't have a lot of perspective on that. I think that we're, you know, we acknowledge the past. I think that in a lot of our songs, there's often a kind of a reference to music, historical stuff, you know, like pop songs from the past. So that's, definitely not unprecedented. But I don't think we want to dwell too much on the past. I think that, you know, I mean, another example on this album is we're covering a Raspberry song that was on the radio when John and I were kids. And there's obviously some, it's a little bit arch because the song is called Overnight Sensation. We are both in our 60s. So the notion that we're playing the part of anybody who's having an overnight sensation is obviously, you know, hilariously ridiculous. You know, it's a great song, and we figured we could come up with a They Might Be Giants-y version of it, that it's not leaning too hard on the original arrangement.
Yeah, well, you guys love that sort of remix, redo stuff. I mean, even on the EP, you included a remix of the first song. And then on the Flood Tour, you play Sapphire Bullets in complete reverse, you know.
That's right.
When you're onto this stage and you're sort of just in the machine of making the music, because I saw in an interview you said it's almost like compulsory, you know, you just keep on making it. Going to the studio, is there sort of like a you're always making something new, and then when you are looking at what you've already made, it's like, okay, let's change it, let's get it really fresh.
I think that, you know, one of the things about playing songs from our catalog is that we can't really do them exactly the way they sounded. You know, we don't sound that way, and I think it's just more interesting to come up with a new arrangement for an old song. Doesn't have to be as radical as playing the song in reverse, but that was, you know, that was a one-off, like that was a challenge. We were joking at the time about how we knew the album Flood backwards and forwards. And then we're thinking, do we really know it backwards and forwards? Let's find out. So that was, you know, it was like a challenge the gauntlet was thrown down. I think, you know, stuff like that is fun and interesting for the band, and hopefully we're not confusing the audience too much.
No, and especially with a song like that, it's so structured and you hear the beats and it's, I mean, of course you follow it. And it's so exciting, you know, such an experimental act. And, you know, talking about the instrumental track on that Eyeball, you can really feel that you guys are always pulling in something new. You know, back in 2021 with Book, you guys released that sort of going by side with the book itself, the sort of companion piece. And now you've got this tour. Alongside, you're also releasing these sort of preview videos on the YouTube, a lyric video of, what was it, Sleep's Older Sister. And do you see these as sort of a part of the combined product, or are they attachments and it's sort of an explosion of the creative process?
I suppose it is all part of the same project. You know, I'm lucky enough to work with John Flansburg, who has a background in doing visual work. He went to art school. You know, he's very interested in graphic design. He did it professionally. He was, you know, he was a layout artist for magazines, and he's very into all the technical stuff, which I have no expertise in. So, I mean, that's definitely a part of what we do is get deeply involved in the visual parts of it, videos, album covers, any other graphic aspects that connect to the music.
Yeah, I mean, you guys have always had a creativity with the delivery. I mean, the classic example back in the day is with your Dial-A-Song program. Mm-hmm. And now I see that some of these singles you're just releasing kind of for free on, is it your Bandcamp or on your website?
It's definitely on the website. I'm not sure about Bandcamp, to tell you the truth, but yeah, I mean, I think we're now in this time, you know, for us, this is not the way we started out. The idea that you'd even, I mean, there was no internet when we were beginning. So the idea that this was part of the promotional apparatus, is for us, you know, a new development, even though it's been around for a while, obviously.
Yeah, and it's the fascinating thing about the new sort of streaming climate is that it's so song-centered. But when it comes to They Might Be Giants, it often feels like the songs are kind of their own individual stories, their own individual packages. And then when it comes together as an album, what makes it really nice is that you guys have such a perspective that it does really feel like it comes together into a unified piece, you know. Does thinking about the streaming process, you know, have you found yourself, especially kind of, as I said, you're on your 24th album, does it feel like, okay, this album, I sort of want to do this album, I sort of want to do this, or are you really often in the flow of like, I've got an idea for a song, let's do this song, okay, it'll go before this one?
Right. I think it probably leans more heavily on individual songs. The creative process is focused on songwriting for us, and the album kind of comes after the fact. We've accumulated a bunch of songs and we try and figure out what would make sense to put together as an album. I mean, it's interesting that the album is still considered a kind of standard format, you know, in the fullness of time. Like, there was a time when, you know, we only put out albums as a physical object, and it kind of made more sense to just think of in those terms. And now everything is much more fluid, you know. A lot of people download individual songs. They're not really that worried about albums. And I don't have a clear sense of how many people sit and listen to an entire album from beginning to end. Is that, you know, is that a thing, or is it just sort of a holdover, you know, as a construct? I don't know how people consume it. I mean, I know that, you know, people look back and see, you know, classic rock albums as perfectly self-contained. And there are a lot of contemporary artists who do kind of put put out albums like it's a entire piece of work altogether. I don't even know where I stand exactly on that. I mean, I think probably we're just more focused on the songs individually.
Yeah, I feel like we're kind of coming back around on that, because there was that era for a long time where it was like, okay, buy a song for $1.29. You know, the song is what's getting on the top of the charts. Oh my God, there's a Bowie album for sale on $9. I'm going to go for that. And now it feels like we're almost returning. There's sort of this reemergence of like the rock band. And people are talking about album releases in a way that I feel like wasn't super there during, say, like the Daft Punk era or similar.
That's interesting to hear. Yeah. I don't have, maybe you have more perspective on it than I do. Just because I'm an old guy, like I know that there's been obviously a big sea change, you know, in the way people consume music, but I'm not too much in touch with what generally people get up to, you know, as far as how they consume music, you know. And we've always been kind of weirdos in that department. You know, we started out by putting songs on a phone machine in the early 1980s, and you call it up and listen to it. And that was not at all a standard, you know, that was just us, basically. And now it's really normal to listen to music on your phone, obviously. So, you know, I think, the main thing is we try and do something that we find interesting and present it in a way that other people can consume it. And in a way, it doesn't matter that much really now how they're consuming it, like how people want to listen to music, as long as, you know, we still have an audience.
Well, that's of course supreme. And are you still living in Brooklyn? Do you go to shows?
Yeah. Oh, sure. I don't get out as much as I used to. And there's, you know, my wife and I go out to all kinds of events, but it's not as much going out to rock shows as it used to be.
Sure.
You know, I mean, sadly, you know, we spend less time at night going out than we did, you know, 30 years ago. But New York's a great place for culture generally, and there's plenty of stuff to do. So we try and take advantage of that as much as possible.
Oh, well, yeah, of course. I'm sure that you're at your shows more than any other. And so you said earlier that you have not been slacking during these last 5 years at all. I mean, I know that you guys have been just touring, and now you've kind of been integrating in the band thing. Has that really made you reevaluate and sort of open up into different processes, or does it just feel like a further development?
I'm not quite sure what you're asking. I suppose we're doing the thing we've always done on some level. Sort of the three main things we do are we write songs, we record them, and then we perform them, you know. And that hasn't changed.
Oh, yeah, sure. I'm asking because you were locked in the mode just for a while there. You know, I'm wondering, were you going back and forth to the studio? Would you sort of hear something at a show and then think, okay, that worked? You know, should we push that?
Right. I guess that, you know, we do most of our creative work. John and I do most of our creative work individually at home. That is kind of how we've always worked. We do stuff in our little project studios. And it's pretty focused on the end product, I would say. We come up with these demo versions of songs, and then we compare everything that we've done. We think, oh, this is good, this will work. And then as far as how we're crafting the show, you know, I think it's, we've always been very, very into, you know, pretty intensive rehearsing and a lot of discussion at rehearsal about what's going to work and how to arrange everything. And we're lucky in a way that we have a lot of musicians that we've been working with for a long time who very much have a kind of a vested interest in the arrangements. And so there's a lot of discussion with these guys about how to best do something and what would be an interesting creative approach to presenting stuff live. I'm not even quite sure what I'm getting at here. It's just like there's a lot of different pieces to the whole machine.
Yeah. Now, I know that we're getting towards the end of the time here, but you brought it up that you guys kind of do your work individually. And that's you said true. That there's like a lot of communication. Now, you said yourself, you're almost 60. This relationship has been there for a long, long time. And it's not like duos in rock music history have like the best reputation of always staying together through the thick and thin. I'm wondering, you know, what really is that, like that sort of individual boundary and that level of communication? Do you credit that to the success or just, you know, your constant synergy on these tracks?
I think it's that, you know, John and I have always felt very simpatico about the project. You know, we are on the same page and we don't have to waste too much time expressing ideas to each other because we kind of know what, you know, we more or less understand what the other guy's thinking about stuff. And then there's plenty of thought that goes into it. I should tell you, I'm 66 actually. So,
oh, okay.
So I'm all on the closer to 70 side than the 60 side. We have nothing to compare this to. We've been working together since we've known each other since we were teenagers, and we've been working together, you know, since we were in our early 20s. And I know that there's this consistent trend amongst musicians to get fed up with the people they're working with, and bands just tend to break up, you know, way, way earlier into the project than we are. But somehow we found this way to keep going, I don't have an explanation for it. I just think we work well together and we value the project. That's where it's at for us.
Yeah. And you guys are still touring, which I mean, I'm sure is an exercise. I mean, just for even if someone my age to get, it's a whole thing. And you guys are doing weekends, you know, at Woodstock coming up.
It's hard, but we're getting better at managing our, you know, we've changed up the way that we tour. We tend to do multiple shows in the same town, from, you know, one night to the next. So there's less traveling involved, and that has really made it much easier for us. And the crew loves it too, because they basically set up and then, you know, there's a lot less moving of equipment. And then, you know, I mean, the trade-off is that we have to change up the show because we know there are people coming to multiple shows. So we're not doing the same show night after night. If we play three nights in Woodstock, we're playing three different shows.
Okay. Yeah. Keeping it fresh. That's one way to keep all the lights awake, right?
Yeah.
All right. And of course, before we go, you're talking about touring, but I have to mention that the last time you were in Montreal was 2016, I think. Are there any plans here to get up here on this side of the border?
No, there's nothing scheduled. I'm sorry to say Woodstock is about as close as we're getting.
Yeah, it's like 5 hours.
Yeah. But I'm sure we'll be up there again at some point. Personally, I've been up to Montreal since then. We came up for the solar eclipse a few years back.
Oh, yeah.
That was pretty cool. I love Montreal. Yeah, we haven't got a Canadian tour in the works. And there's a lot of other places. I've been doing interviews with Australian radio, and they're all wondering when we're coming back there. You know, we don't have any plans for Europe this year, but we will be visiting all those places eventually.
Well, let me just say that we're a little easier to get to than Australia, Europe.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to come up and get some poutine. The Jazz Fest is happening this summer.
Absolutely. No, I hope to, even if we're not playing, hope to get up to Montreal again soon.
All right. Well, thank you so much for doing this interview. It is just an honor to be able to talk to you. Of course, your album is coming out April 14th. The World is to Dig. You can already listen to Outside Brain and Wu-Tang on any streaming service. And on YouTube, you've got Sleep's Older Sister and Overnight Sensation. Is there any direction you want to give our listeners?
Direction? What do you mean? Like advice? Or
where advice, where to go, where they can find you.
Oh, well, yeah, you can always find us on DepecheMode.com. I'm kidding, of course. Just if you just Google us, you'll find us, and you can get free, as you know, you can get free stuff. There's tons of downloads, and you find out everything else that I've forgotten to tell you about where we're going to be and, you know, what's going to happen next.
All right, sounds good. Well, everyone stay tuned to all those channels for everything, and I'll be right back with some music. Thank you very much, John Linnell.
Great talking to you, Maxwell.
Minimum wage! Yeah!
Wow, what an opportunity to get to talk to John Linnell of They Might Be Giants. Huh, who would have thought? Me. That clip of him saying, nice talking to you, Maxwell, at the end there, I'm going to have to edit that into the intro or something. Anyway, of course, again, thank you so much to John and They Might Be Giants for doing that interview, interacting with the station, and world, big world. Well, anyway, we've got a whole rest of the show to do. Of course, I thought we might just leave that interview here with a little instrumental track off of Flood that was just Minimum Wage. And for the rest of the show, well, I'm about to play some ads for you. But after the ads, I'm going to do our little Easter Passover tradition on the show. Play through the Lawrence of Arabian Nights disco medley by the Ritchie family. One of my favorites. Always puts me in the mind of escaping Egypt, running through that desert. But first, some ads. And then we're in the mood for collecting some eggs in a really fun way.
If you're interested in audio storytelling at all, volunteer with CJLO's news department. We'll teach you the ins and outs of audio journalism, no experience needed. You'll learn interviewing, scripting, recording, editing, and we'll support you every step of the way on your journey to producing your own original reporting. We also take a lot of pride in our local focus and coverage of the issues often forgotten by mainstream outlets. Join the team and get your voice on air by filling out a volunteer application form at cjlo.com/volunteer. Or come to one of our weekly pitch meetings, Mondays at 1 p.m. on the Loyola campus, CC430.
Hey, radio listeners. Have you ever wondered what your favorite characters would listen to? Better yet, imagined a soundtrack for your favorite movie or book? If the answer is yes, then tune into Something for the Mood every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. only on CJLO 1690 AM. I'm your host, Zoe, and I invite you to explore a new topic with me through music both new and old, but always funky, each week. To quote the wise words of iconic duo Chibo Motto, you got to know your chicken. And if you do, you'll tune into Something for the Mood every week. See you all there.
All right, everyone. You've been listening to a very Easter Passover edition of REVC. With also There Might Be Giants in there, because we had that amazing interview. And of course it's Easter Passover, so what can I do but play? Close out with the overture to JCS, Jesus Christ Superstar. Far and away the best Deep Purple album. I'm a huge fan of this album. And they wrote it at 19, Lloyd Webber and Tim Rice. Whatever. We don't need to get into it. Before this, you heard... It's quite busy to talk over. Before this, you heard Istanbul, Lawrence of Arabia, In a Persian Market, The Arabian Nights Medley by the Ritchie Family off, of course, Arabian Nights. And let me just say again, thank you to They Might Be Giants. Thank you to CJ Lowe for such an opportunity. And I'll let the cool part of the song play us out.